Hi there, I'm Jonathan Fields, and this is Good Life Project. So my guest today is my good friend Chris Carr. Chris has had a pretty extraordinary journey over the last 10 years, from major adversity to just this place of almost magical existence, starting a movement and changing the world along the way. So we're going to kind of track back and then move forward and explore. So awesome to be hanging out with you.
Thank you.
From that introduction, everyone's scratching their heads saying, what is happening here? So take me back. We're sitting here and around 10 years ago, huge change in your life.
Yeah. You know, I was an actress. I was a dancer. I was a storyteller, and I was living in New York. I was 31 years old. Underneath it all, I wasn't very happy and I wasn't feeling well. And I knew something was coming, but I didn't know what it was. And it turned out that on Valentine's Day 2003, I was diagnosed with an incurable stage 4 cancer.
Were you in physical pain at that point?
I had some pains throughout, over the course of a few years, but you know, I thought it was acid reflux, you know, constipation.
Regular stuff.
You know, and I definitely didn't know how to take care of myself. I was a real stress junkie. But I never thought that it could have been a incurable, inoperable cancer. And so that was the turning point and the tipping point for me to literally leave the oncologist's office and then go off and start to rebuild my life. I didn't know what it was going to look like, but I knew I needed to know and learn how to take care of myself.
So you go into an oncologist's office at that age, expecting, well, first you go into a doctor's office expecting some normal diagnosis.
Yeah,
and then you
exactly.
find out, okay, this is not a normal diagnosis.
Yeah.
Then you find out it's cancer. Then you find out it's stage 4.
Yeah.
31 years old.
So much went through my mind. How long do I have to live? You know, originally I was given 10 years, so this is my 10-year anniversary of actually living well with cancer. I was told that I should perhaps get a triple organ transplant because I have cancer in my liver and both of my lungs. So
at 31 years old, you're being told three organs.
Yeah, a lot of misinformation, honestly. And that's when I became the CEO of Save My Ass Technologies, as I often call it. And I found the best doctor for my disease. And it turned out that, you know, I have this crazy sarcoma, crazy, not so sexy sarcoma. It turns out that it can be slow growing, and right now mine is slow growing and stable. It can become aggressive also, and I get tracked every year and a half to just make sure we're still in homeostasis and still hanging out nicely with each other. The tipping point and turning point came when my doctor said, we're going to watch and wait. We're going to hope for the stable version and go off and live your life. And I didn't know how to live my life. I didn't know how to take care of myself. I didn't really, though I was in a creative field, I didn't know how to be fulfilled, you know, happy. Mm. I had no idea who the hell I was. You know, I was pretending to be everybody but me.
So where do you go from there?
Well, honestly, the first place I went after I realized that this was going to be a long journey, it wouldn't get cut out, it wouldn't get, you know, chemotherapied away, I would have to learn how to live with cancer, go the distance, was Whole Foods.
Right. So let's stop on that phrase, though. Live with cancer
is
not a phrase you normally hear people say.
No.
You know, it's always like, I've got this. Okay, how do we recover from it? How do we get rid of it?
Yeah.
This is a very radically different approach.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, how does that come to you?
It's actually a great question. You know, I think at first, to be totally honest with you, and this is something that my readers don't even really know, I thought I could make it go away myself. You know, I started to get really passionate about integrative functional medicine, and I was very much on the path of curing myself. Like, screw you.
Yeah.
I got this one.
And there are a lot of claims about all sorts of miracles and all sorts of things.
Absolutely. And the wonderful part about my work is I've helped, you know, thousands and thousands of people stabilize, recover from whatever they're going through by changing their diet and their lifestyle. And for me, it certainly helped me tremendously, my quality of life, my immune system. I'm sure it's contributing to my homeostasis, right? But the mental shift came for me when I realized that I was doing so much for cancer and not for Chris. And I moved into this place over the past few years, really, of just saying, my cure is finding peace in this circumstance and learning how to live and accept who I am, all of me, the tumors, every single part of me, and moving from that place, because I could live a very long life with this disease and I could waste a lot of time. You know, am I cured now? Did I fast enough? Did I, you know, do enough enemas, colonics? Did I drink enough green juice? And I teach this way of living, but I also teach how to make peace with yourself, how to love yourself at a deep, deep level. And that love is really my my medicine.
So, and I want to go into really what that love is and how you like, how you really dive into it. But here's a really interesting question that comes to me. And that, and because, and we've talked about this personally, so I have tinnitus. There's a sound in my head 24/7. Yeah. And at some point I made, you know, this, it's not cancer, but I made a similar decision about it and said, okay, there's no known cure for this. I've tried, you know, like all the regular stuff. Now I have to decide that, okay, if this is me and this is me for life, how do I get as happy as humanly possible? But there are people who came to me and said, okay, but the moment you make that decision, you give up the possibility of a cure. Like, you know, aren't you walking away from like this smallest possibility that you actually can make it totally go away?
You're so smart. I think that's another great question. I was teaching something recently, and I was teaching a workshop, and the base of that workshop was acceptance. And also I was teaching an anti-inflammatory diet and lifestyle, but I was also teaching the practices of acceptance. And I was talking to a faculty member, and she said the same thing. Aren't you teaching people to like give up? Isn't that a dangerous line of thinking? And I think the folks who think that way have never really experienced true long-term marathon adversity. Because what I find is that there's there's the fight or flight response, right? There's the stress response, there's the peace and relaxation and calm response, and there is a whole biological, biochemical experience that happens in our bodies. And if we're constantly in a place of stress about the ringing, you want it gone, you want it gone, stress about the ringing, there's the fucking ringing, oh, there's the ringing. And you have moments of like, okay, I can deal with the ringing. No, I can't deal with the ringing. I really can't deal with the ringing. What happens is that you sink into this place of not only stress, but deep depression and anxiety. And I think you compound the issue. And for me, moving from a place of I live with cancer, I live with certain health issues, and making, accepting those issues, loving myself regardless, always having my back. Chris, I got you. Even though you have this, I got you. I accept you. I love you. I got your back with this, girl. I can then make better game plans. I can then befriend myself and not abandon myself in my time of need. Now, that doesn't mean, and we've talked about this, that there aren't moments of pain, sadness, frustration, but they're few and far between.
No, and it's, I think also part of it is so much of any condition, any physical condition, is exacerbated by mindset, by stress.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you're constantly, you know, if you bring whatever is in you, you know, and you're constantly trying to figure out, okay, the only thing that you live for is to make it go away, that keeps your level of pervasive stress through the roof, and it ends up spiraling whatever you're sort of living with out of control. I know, you know, like, it's almost like, I think you hold this, it's like you're living this duality where you're open to the notion that at some point, if something comes along and there is a magic bullet, FNA.
Yeah.
Great. Rock on. But I have to live on the assumption that it is what it is right now and be as good as I can just the way I am right now and do all the things in my life. And that kicked off an extraordinary journey for you, that approach.
Yeah.
And I want to talk more about what that journey is and what you've done. But you also did something really unusual, which is, you know, like, okay, I'm not just going to keep this to myself.
Yeah.
You know, like, and you first sort of like became quote famous. Because you kind of like went very public with this. So tell me about how that whole thing unfolded.
You know, it started in 2003 when I was diagnosed, really. And I was in front of the camera, but I was moving towards being behind the camera. I had opened a photography business and I was shooting a lot of actors' headshots. And I started making my first little mini documentary about homeless men and women. And then I was diagnosed and I didn't know what I was going to do. Not only was it really scary from the perspective of being a patient with no treatment options, but I no longer wanted to be in my career. I knew I had a huge life change that was coming. I basically sold my apartment to pay for my existence. Mm-hmm. And I decided to start filming myself. I decided to start talking to the camera, really. It was my buddy. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have anyone to talk to. I didn't know anybody with cancer, and I didn't know any young people, especially young women with cancer. And so first there was that creative expression, you know, using my creativity to find my joy and peace and make sense of all of this. But also then I got frustrated because I started to get pissed that there wasn't enough information or there weren't any role models out there for a young woman living with cancer who wanted to go an integrative path, who was questioning spirituality, questioning what she had learned, questioning her diet, her lifestyle, and was also wanted to bring some humor to the whole situation. And so that's when Crazy Sexy Cancer was born. 4 years after I started filming, I sold the project to TLC and Discovery Channel. Mm-hmm. And around that time, I realized that there was this word called platform, you know, mm-hmm. and that I might have a very small window of opportunity to put some great stuff in the world.
Okay, so stop for a second. Crazy, sexy.
Good point. Cancer.
How receptive were, so, and this, you're filming for 4 years, you turn it into essentially like a mini documentary,
a documentary.
And you're like, I'm going to call it Crazy, Sexy, Cancer.
Yeah.
People receptive to that?
90% thank you, thank you, thank you. 10% what the hell is going on? You know what I mean? But let me define Crazy Sexy Cancer. First, it was the title of mass emails that I would send to friends and family, you know, and I needed to have humor involved. Yeah. And because there was some tough stuff that I was sharing. And then it became, for me, the definitions is crazy. It's out of the box. It's forward thinking. It's that type of speak when somebody says, that's crazy. That'll never happen. And you and I say, really watch us. Mm. You know, and sexy is empowered. And cancer was and always will be my teacher. And so it made sense to me. And it really kicked off a movement that I wasn't even prepared for, quite honestly, especially when it aired. And then Oprah followed, and then the first book followed, and it all came out around the same time, which was more scary than cancer itself in some ways.
Oprah.
and then I realized I had to continue because I got such an outpouring of love and questions and needs and community. Mm.
Was that expected or just completely taken by surprise?
Completely took me by surprise. I mean, I didn't even really, I started a blog in 2007 and I really thought, oh, this blog thing won't catch on with like the general world. You know what I mean? Right. I had no idea what I was doing. And I started that blog and literally there would be hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of comments and thousands of emails from people. And that's when I realized I better start learning this stuff.
Yeah. So, but that raises a really fascinating question too, right? Because on the one hand, you're now positioning yourself, deliberately positioning yourself. You're going out there, you're saying, look, I have a different voice. I have a whole different approach to this. Right. This is something that a lot of people don't talk about. It's under the covers. It's, you know, they don't talk about it in their families. They don't talk about it with their friends. They don't talk about it completely publicly on this level. And you're tapping into this mass emotion of a lot of people who are, you know, and you can empathize with them because you're them.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you've got to do a ton to be well yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to, I'm assuming at some, and tell me if I'm wrong here, you've got to create some level of pretty intense boundary and shield to make sure I'm okay. I'm taking care of myself. I'm like, I have my solitude. I have my,
absolutely,
all this stuff. But now you're positioned as a major public figure who's leading, you know, a movement, which means it's almost like by definition, a zillion other people want a piece of you. Mm-hmm. How do you handle that?
Well, I didn't handle it well in the beginning, but now I have protection. I have a team. I have more people that work with me and surround me. And I also have gotten good at saying no. I'm not great at it. I still throw myself under the bus from time to time, more times than I'd like to admit. But if I'm not feeling well, I can't teach, I can't write, I can't continue what I think is incredibly important work, especially now that I've opened it up beyond cancer, and it's really about prevention, and it's really about the planet, and it's really about the interconnection of the two, and I'm incredibly passionate about these things, so I've got to feel good.
Nah. So let's zoom the lens forward then, and talk about more fun stuff. it's a part of you, but you've taken this, and from where you started with that, from going public, like you said, now it's not just, you know, crazy sexy cancer was the beginning.
Yeah.
And now it's, you know, crazy sexy life. Mm. It's crazy sexy kitchen.
Yeah.
Awesome new book. You've written a whole bunch of books, you speak all over the world, and you become really this evangelist, this leader of a movement about just how to reach into the different parts of your life. Mm-hmm. Nutrition, lifestyle, meditation, movement, all this different stuff to live a better life, which happens to fit really well with this project.
Yeah.
Tell me how you're sort of like, it's been making the shift into a much bigger mm-hmm. lens and sort of a much bigger message.
You know, it really came from my readers, because I started to get so many emails and comments from people who said, I don't have cancer, but I like what you're doing. And I always talk about what I'm eating, drinking, and thinking. And I love your energy, and I want a piece of that. Is that okay? Am I a freak if I'm like hanging out with you? And you know, can I come too?
Right.
And that's when I realized that I needed to open this up, and I wrote Crazy Sexy Diet in 2011. And that was my entrance into everybody, you know, into prevention and into a much bigger movement. And from that point, I really got jazzed too, because it's also helpful and good for me to not always talk just solely about cancer.
Yeah.
Since it's a part of my life every single day, it's really exciting for me to go and branch out beyond that, though that's always going to be my core, you know.
That. So from there, then you're talking about, and I guess we should really define also a lot of what your core message is about, you know, because a lot of it revolves around how you fuel your body.
Absolutely.
So share mm-hmm. some of that.
So when I was doing my research, and I was looking into what would help me, what would increase my vitality, boost my immune system, and possibly, you know, extend my longevity, it just kept coming back to a plant-based diet and an anti-inflammatory plant-based diet specifically. And I'm a guinea pig. I've done a lot of self-experimentation. I've done a lot of radical stuff, and I've done some middle-of-the-road stuff, and I've done some stuff that's not effective at all. And so I took my 10 years of research, and that's what I've been writing about and teaching about, and just building a great network of colleagues and functional medicine practitioners, and trying to bring it out to, you know, a wider audience with humor and fun and irreverence and whatnot. And so I, in essence, teach a vegan lifestyle, but I also talk a lot about stress reduction, love, acceptance, mm-hmm. joy, because the diet is just one piece of it. If you don't have the rest of it, it's not necessarily going to fuel you.
Right.
And I'm not an all or nothing, my way or the highway type of person, because I love you. I love everyone. And so my overall goal is to raise awareness about a lot of the issues with our factory farms, with big agro, with the chemicals that we are putting on and in our bodies. You know, we're just solely talking about inflammation from a physical perspective, and encourage people to reduce the amount of animal products they're consuming, to choose better choices, to really think about the chemicals that they surround themselves with, and to not only take it to the stores, like, you know, vote with your dollars, but to also get active on a political level, to get active with their vote, to get active with their local politicians, and to get involved in their communities, because that's what's really needed, you know. And then from the other perspective, if I teach people, you know, you're all you got. That relationship with you, that flow, that ease, if it's not there, that's where you want to put maybe your energy in 2013, 14, 15, you know, make that a big part of your intention, your resolution.
Yeah. I think that's so huge also. I think it's one of the really big missing pieces, even of functional medicine, integrative medicine, mm-hmm. is that, you know, how you feel your body, absolutely critical. You know, mm-hmm. so, so important. But a lot of my focus over the last couple of years has really focused on sort of like this word alignment. Mm. You know, like when you wake up in the morning, do you feel like you're the life that you're building for yourself, your relationships, the way you contribute to the world, you know, that is it fully aligned with sort of like your DNA, with who you think you are? Because I think a lot of times for most people, the answer is in all the different areas, some yes, but a lot no. But you don't, and you feel it every day. Like you walk through every day knowing something's wrong. Something doesn't feel right. Maybe you're sick. Maybe you're in pain. Maybe you're just angsty. Maybe you're stressed. But you're not exact. You can't figure out what it's coming from.
Yes.
And, you know, but fundamentally it's coming from this deeper sense of something's not lining up right in my mm-hmm. life. And nobody kind of zooms the lens out to actually ask, you know, and say, and look and say, okay, who am I? You know, like, and let me look at, you know, let me look at the people in my life, the culture I surround myself with, you know, the way I contribute to the world, the physical setting I'm in.
Yeah.
Like, do these things all match up with the fiber of my being? And when they don't, it's, you feel it.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of times you don't know that's what you're feeling.
I think that's such a good point. And for me, I take your word alignment, and for me, I use constitution, like what's right for my constitution.
Mm, yeah, I like that.
What makes me happy at the mind, body, spirit level, and what's not in, as you would say, alignment with that. And I can say that looking back on my previous career, I'm a pretty shy, introverted person, although that's not how I come off. I know.
I mean, it's so funny. You're the shy introvert, but you're like all over the place.
I know.
TV, speaking, traveling the world.
Yeah, it doesn't mean I'm not the class clown and, right. you know, I don't have a big personality, but my natural way of being is more introverted. And when I look at my previous career and I look at the previous men that I was dating and I look at my previous relationships and whatnot, I realized that they were not in line with what my body really needed. Mm. And when I started to think of what my body needed, that's when, because of cancer, that's when I started to eat differently. I fell in love with somebody who's just awesome and, you know, doesn't like trample my adrenal glands. and I started to build different types of friendships and the different, as I said earlier, type of friendship and relationship with myself.
So where do you feel like you are along that spectrum right now?
I'm not an expert. It's not a term that I'm fond of, you know, though sometimes people put me in an expert category, especially when I'm giving keynotes and whatnot. Yeah. I'm a student of life and I learn so much more every single year, and I'm going into a more contemplative time in my life this year.
What's moving that?
I think probably being really forward and out for the past 10 years, and then truthfully having some adrenal issues as a result of it, and saying, okay, maybe you have to go back to home base, keep coming back home to what you teach and what you write. I write for myself. People think that I write for everyone else. I'm glad people read it, and I'm glad that it moves them, and I love my readers dearly, but I write what I need to read to remind myself of what I need to be happy and healthy.
Hmm. So you said you're going to more of a contemplative mode.
Yeah.
Contemplating what?
Everything that we've been talking about. You know, I turned 42 this year, and what's this decade going to be like? What do I want in 2013? How do I want to feel? What do I want to experience in my life? You know, I've had many great opportunities with my career and they've been wonderful, but you know, what does my soul need? What does Chris truly need? Mm-hmm. And I think I probably need a little more time in my introverted space.
Mm. Yeah, no, I totally get that, actually. I mean, we're very similar in that way. It seemed like, you have a public persona, like you speak, you do this, you know, we're doing this show and I'm hosting a show. but I'm fundamentally an introvert as well. I've been looking forward at 2013, and to me, there's this balance between creation, connection, and distribution. And you kind of need the three when you have to build a career where you're earning enough to live well in the world, and you're contributing to the world fundamentally too. And yeah, it's a business. You know, I've got to take care of my family. But every time I go into the connection distribution mode too far, it pulls me out of the creation mode. And fundamentally, my big love is creating.
Yes.
You know, and I just need to be in a cave for a certain chunk of time to do it. Or else I get the chunks of it done here and there, but I never feel good about like the totality of what I'm actually bringing to the world, how deep it is, like how fundamentally my outbound metric is impact. Mm-hmm. And my inbound metric is trust. So I can't optimize those if I'm spending all my time out in the world, because I develop great relationships and I'm out there, but I feel less and less good about what I'm actually contributing.
Absolutely. I think that's so well said. And I'm very similar. And I need to metabolize stuff before I can put it out in the world.
I like that word.
Really needs to be in my gut and in my DNA. And so because I've created a lot of projects in the past few years, I think this year I'm going to create more projects, absolutely. But there's going to be some juicy downtime too, and some travel and some time to just muse and be and color and do things, work with animals, do things that have nothing to do with my work. Because I find that the greatest ideas and the greatest ahas come from moments where I'm not working, you know. I'm doing something passionate that I love that has nothing to do with my platform.
Right. Isn't that so true?
Yeah.
It's like you're just out doing something completely unrelated.
Yeah.
The biggest struggles, the biggest problems, like it just, the solutions drop from the sky, like big, fat ideas drop from the sky.
Absolutely. And I don't think we give, people are not reminded of that, or we don't value that in our society, because the downtime is really when you'll find the idea that makes you your first million. The downtime is when you'll realize, oh, I'm with the wrong doctor, I need to be with this person that I read in that magazine 2 years ago, and you're just walking in the forest, and that idea comes to you.
Yeah.
But if we're back-to-back-to-back with all of our programs, products, problems, time commitments, you bleed yourself dry. Mm. And so, you know, I think it's a great thing to remind people and remind ourselves.
Yeah, and you eliminate all the time for where the good stuff comes.
Right.
Because you think that by filling all that time, that's where you're going to get your best life, your best ideas.
Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Total bunk.
It's true.
I want to talk about your recent book, because it's awesome.
Thank you.
Fundamentally. Crazy Sexy Kitchen.
Yeah.
This is kind of like a big, big leap for you.
Yeah, it is. It really is.
So, maybe yes, maybe no, but it's a very different book than anything you've ever done before. So the last one was Crazy Sexy Diet. So it kind of laid out, okay, this is what I believe in terms of what you put into your body. But, this is a cookbook. Number one, it's like freaking gorgeous.
Thank you.
I mean, it's just like, I look at the pictures and I'm literally, I can feel my salivary gland. It's just like, I need that. So beautiful, beautiful book. But tell me how you kind of said, this is a project that I need to do. And then tell me why you did it this way.
Yeah, well, after diet, it seemed as though I needed to give people more recipes, because I gave some sample recipes and I gave philosophy and did a lot of deep teaching. And that's sort of like the Bible of what I practice. Mm. But with Kitchen, I wanted to really open it up. And I didn't want it to just include cleansing, healing recipes that were more restrictive. I wanted it to include delicious plant-based, like knock your socks off cuisine.
Right.
And my grandmother was a chef. And so she was the inspiration in a lot of ways for this book, and I dedicated it to her. And when I knew I wanted to kick it up a notch, I'm a good cook, but I'm not a chef, and I tend to cook very simple cuisine. I reached out to my friend Chad Sarno, who works at Whole Foods, and I said, would you work on this book with me? And then I reached out to a lot of our mutual chef friends and put together just this unbelievably delicious book.
Right.
And it was very fun for me to make, not only to curate the recipes, but also just to roll my sleeves up in the creative process. I really took it up a notch with the art design, with the photography.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was just a very juicy, satisfying, creative experience.
So do you like that part of it?
I love it. I'm a control freak. I'm a Virgo. I'm type A. I write all these things about like balance and love.
It's like, I must see everything before it goes out.
Yeah, and I'm just, I'm maniacally.
Well, it's like, you write for yourself. You're like, be this way.
Yeah, exactly. I'm working on that. That's part of my 2013 plan. But yes, I have my hand in every single area of my business and my publishing and my books. And there's nothing that I'm not overseeing.
Mm.
Yeah.
So, awesome book. And I know you've got more in you. So, and you said you're going to kind of pull back a little bit and contemplate. What is bubbling up about where you want to go from here? Do you have any clarity around that?
We're creating a few wonderful self-published projects this year that we'll release in the world. And I say we, my crazy sexy team. Mm. I really love blogging. I love my new website and I love making videos.
Which is, by the way, at
chriscarr.com.
Which is gorgeous. Gorgeous.
Thank you.
We're like, I keep telling you, I want my site to be yours. Less pink, but.
Yeah.
Maybe not.
So I'm just, I'm sort of allowing myself to see where this goes this year. I've been doing a lot of videos interviewing people and mostly people in the health and wellness and sort of environmental world, and we'll see what happens. I have another book that I'm destined to write that I've already signed my deal for, so that's going to happen at some point. Mm. But right now, I'm just letting it be open,
right,
and just enjoying the process of really connecting with my readers again.
Mm. That's nice.
Yeah.
So the name of this project is Good Life Project.
Yeah.
And I always like to ask everybody, when I offer that term, to live a good life, what does it mean to you? What comes up?
Well, for me, honestly, where it is right now, it used to be about the goals and the plaques and the accomplishments. And it's not about that anymore for me. Right now, a good life is a content life.
Define that. What is content?
Being happy with what you have, knowing that it's enough, knowing that you're enough, feeling that sense of connection to source and self, being joyful in your relationships with your beloved or with your friendships, and just feeling a sense of calm in the world and in your own inner ecosystem. That's a good life. That's a really good life.
Mm, I like that. Do you ever think about legacy?
Oh, I used to think about it. It used to drive me crazy, you know, especially when I thought the death was closer. You know, I don't know when I'm going to die. None of us know. I have a reminder more so than other people. And certainly when I get scanned every year and a half, you're going there to find out, is it closer to the time when you're going to die? That's basically what a scan is. So that used to drive me a lot, and I think that's one of the reasons why I created a lot of books and film and a lot of stuff in a very short period of time. Now, I think, you know, I've saved a lot of animals. I've helped a lot of people. I think folks are feeling better. They're pooping more. You know, they're happier, the people who have read my stuff, and that's... already in process. It's already happened. Now, you know, all I can do is keep just learning and being myself and trying these things on for size, and anything else will just materialize if it's meant to be.
Beautiful. So thank you so much for hanging out today. It's always fun having conversations.
Fun and deep.
Fun and deep. So I'm Jonathan Fields. My guest today has been Chris Carr. You can find more about her at chriscarr.com, author, speaker, movement leader, world shaker. Signing off for Good Life Project.